kill the doctor.
But I haven't found him yet. Hello, and welcome to the Whovian Review. I'm Michael.
I'm Shelby.
I'm Jeremy with two hats.
And this is your devil-horned Colin.
Tonight we are going to be talking about the ominous, the depressing, and the very sad Terminus.
Well,
don't make it sound like there's a terminal illness or something going on. It sounds dark.
I mean,
well, there is. The Lazarus.
Oh.
And, of course, we've got one of the most, like, you know, insane paradoxes in Doctor Who in this one.
And that is?
That is the fact that, you know, a ship went back in time and created the universe that had to exist for the ship to exist to create the universe.
Yeah, that's just a little timey-wimey. We see some time circles in Doctor Who.
Is this our, like, biggest paradox up to this point in Doctor Who?
Probably.
I can't imagine.
I mean,
it's, maybe.
Sorry,
possibly. Who knows? But all I will say is that you're right. It is kind of an odd paradox that we've got here.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love paradoxes, but this one was pretty on the nose.
Yeah, I mean, like when you get two,
you can get.
When
yeah.
you get two ducks together, it's just bad news. Like, keep it to one.
Well, this is the theory that they came up with. This doesn't necessarily mean that is absolute. It's a theory, and they went with it. We didn't get confirmation of that theory.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool idea, though.
It is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Honestly, I thought it brought gravitas to this episode more than anything else. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the teaser of it being in the center of the universe, and, oh, is this a coincidence? I never thought it was a coincidence.
I don't think the Garm ever really convinced me that it was a threat. He never was very threatening throughout the whole thing, other than just being big.
No, well, I mean, it was the Garm. Well, because everyone was saying, once you go see him, you never come back. I mean, that was pretty ominous.
I actually liked it because he liked him as one of my favorite ones, because he's built both as, like, half a cuddly-looking monster and an evil-looking monster at the same time. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's a furry's dream.
Yeah.
He looks similar to Carbonista.
So when I saw him, I was just like, I just wish he were a good guy. And he was a good guy.
He was a very good boy.
Yeah.
this was kind of interesting because it's rare that we encounter a situation where nobody wants to be there. Like, everybody on the ship does not want to be on that ship.
Yeah.
There's a couple people that wanted to be there for, you know,
a few seconds, yeah.
No, there were minutes. There were minutes where they did.
A few minutes, but then they were like, oh no, I want to get out of here. Like, it was just...
That was Carrie and Olvir, because I think those who were trying to basically take whatever they could find on it that would help them out. But
space
then,
pirates.
But then the space pirates got pirated themselves by the person stealing their
I don't think that it was stolen. I think that their crew just abandoned them.
Yeah.
Yes.
The crew realized where they were going. It's like,
we know where you are. We're not letting you back on this ship.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I guess they're kind of stuck there.
Because they were worried about...
the door first.
Well, I mean, like, the doctor could feasibly take them home, but...
I should point out that Liza Goddard, who played Carrie with that beautiful, frizzy, blonde hair, she actually was Colin Baker's wife, and I believe at this time, or just around this time, because that was kind of an interesting little tidbit.
And I like how they needed those modded out base helmets to, you know, fit her hair.
I mean, like, man, I've heard of this, like, you know, this was a little before my time, but I heard, like, all those ozone, you know, depleting chemicals were really good for hair holding.
Well, I mean, I didn't know that you could actually have traveling perm things. That's what that looked like to me. Like,
yeah, it was definitely,
I mean,
80s.
The future. Yeah, I did have a quick future concern that was thwarted, you know, fairly quickly, but, like, I totally thought that they were saying lepers. Or, like, lepers.
I think the one guy did say lepers,
yeah,
but I think it was shorthand for that.
For whatever diseases of the
time.
Yeah,
for some reason.
They're calling them lepers, and I guess they were expecting us to die somehow. But.
Yeah, and then they came to Lazars, which, you know.
And it definitely wasn't leprosy, because first of all, that was cured in the 40s, and second of all, it doesn't transmit through the air.
Well, this we don't know what time.
Mutation version.
I don't know if we know what time frame this is, and I don't even know if they're necessarily human.
It seems
human
pretty future-y.
Yeah.
It seems that way, but I don't know if they're
I
even
would
humans.
Say if you can learn how to travel through space, and it seems accidentally make a time machine, you probably could have cured leprosy somewhere along the way.
Yeah, I mean, you already have radiation therapy, for goodness sake.
Yeah, and also
in the
universe. I mean, and that was pretty wild that their plans, like, they just, like, blast you with radiation and hope for the best.
I mean,
yeah, you would think, like, the Black Guardian with his petty dispute about the Doctor, he'd really be honing on this area to destroy the whole universe, which seems like his ultimate goal, rather than just dealing with this one, you know, dude that's going around space and time.
Maybe, I guess, the Doctor thwarts him in multiple ways. And
I mean, he certainly does, but, like, it seems like Turlo could have had that assignment instead of just, like, find the Doctor and kill him.
Yeah, and, like, the Black Guardian, you know, orchestrated all the things so that they'd end up on Terminus, and then he was just like, you're doing a bad job, Turlo.
Yeah, Turlo took every step that he asked, really. He poked at the and fondled the heart of the TARDIS to a negative way.
Like,
and the heart of the ship too.
He's like, touch this door, this circle. Oh, it opens. Okay, now play with, like, and he's like, says stuff to him. He's like, well, what am I supposed to do? Then it's like, everyone comes in. He's like, I gotta fix this. And
that was a great scene with Tegan.
Yeah, that was great.
Oh yeah, I think that was beautifully written, and I think it kind of goes to the camaraderie that later comes up between those two, is that you really kind of have this scene where Tegan's not really sure of Turlo, but he really does a great job of kind of convincing her with very logical things, like, why would I devastate the TARDIS, which I'm actually on, and I'm not supposed to be destroying myself here? That would be kind of pointless.
Yeah, and he's just like, I'm not being deceptive, I'm just not being a jerk like you.
Yeah, he brings it back to her.
Yeah, he turns it around and makes her feel insecure so she stops questioning him.
Yeah, and it works, too. I mean, it's kind of hard for her to continue questioning if he's kind of making sense.
I mean, it works so well that later in the story where he's just like, could you ever kill someone in cold blood? She doesn't go, well, that's a funny question. Maybe I should dig into that a little more. She's just like, you're a weirdo.
Yeah.
I wish you... Because I can tell she's so fed up with him at one point. I just wish she'd just turn me like, no.
I mean, Joe did a great job of convincing her that he was a creep throughout this episode.
But also, he's questioning it at that point. He's questioning, do I really want to kill the Doctor? Because he's seeing the Doctor.
Oh, I think he's questioning it even beforehand.
No, I know, but I mean, he's literally bringing his questions to someone who trusts the Doctor implicitly, and the Doctor trusts as well. So it's like one of those things where Turlo's really kind of getting a feel for what's going on with someone that he wouldn't normally share that information with.
Well, especially because in the previous story, we saw him try to get advice from an authority figure, the headmaster of his school, and then it turned out that that was just the Black Guardian in disguise messing with him. And, you know, so, like, he was really going out on a limb bringing that up to Tegan, not just because of her relationship with the Doctor, but because she could have been the Black Guardian in disguise,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I have to say that there's a lot more villains, you know, that seem a lot more competent and also are really a lot better at building trust than the Black Guardian. Like, I if I was in Turlo's shoes... Like, even with all of the Black Guardian's power and the crystal that I can't get rid of, I mean, like, I don't have any faith that if I take care of what he needs to do, he's not just going to leave me behind and leave the whole universe behind.
Like, in the Black Guardian's defense, we haven't seen the whole story, so we don't...
Black Guardian's advocate over here.
Well, I'm just saying, if you have...
If the universe
was
all destroyed, all the suffering would be gone.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, we haven't heard the reasons for what the Black Guardian's doing. We don't know why.
But to Colin's point, if it was, like, from Turlough's perspective, he's seen what we've seen, and...
Yeah. Yes, and Turlough's kind of probably thinking, why would I kill someone who's obviously good over someone who's obviously trying to hurt me? It just doesn't make... And Turlough uses logic. I mean, he's a very logical thinker, so... That's going to be a challenge for the Black Guardian going forward, I think.
Logical to some degree. I mean, it's always, you know, shattered with some emotion. I think that's why he has a connection with the Black Guardian. You know, he wants to go home and, you know, he wants to have his life back. But once you have access to the TARDIS, that all seems to melt away. You know, what legitimate motivations linger in?
Well, I think it's the fact that the Black Guardian keeps, like, you know, electrocuting him.
Yeah, that would motivate me a little bit.
I wanted to point out that some of my earliest memories, and I actually remembered after watching the story again, some of my earliest memories of Doctor Who were Tegan and Turlough crawling around in that grating and that ducting, because I remember that to a T. I didn't see this whole story, but I'm almost positive that those scenes I saw when I was young. And I think it was because I was trying to sneak the television, because Doctor Who for me used to come on around 11 o'clock at night on Saturday.
Oh,
so I wasn't really supposed to stay up and watch it, but there was nothing that was going to stop me from wanting to. So I'd probably sneak downstairs in the basement, turn on the TV very quietly, and hope to God nobody came down while I was watching Doctor Who.
How often did you get away with that?
Oh, very often. Matter of fact, there was one time...
Does Stan know of this now?
My dad actually did walk down on me while I was downstairs watching it, and I actually had to shut off everything and hide behind the magazine stand. He came down in his underwear and was just trying to get, like, a drink or something, to water or something, and... He didn't see me. He was too tired to actually see me cowering behind this magazine stand that clearly would...
Or maybe he saw you and was just like, well, if my kid's going to do something bad, this isn't that bad, whatever.
Yeah, no. And so I was just like, no, I'm pretty sure he didn't see me because he would have said something. But he, I don't think he was looking in my direction. I think he just kind of turned on the light, walked into the kitchen, came back into the room, turned out the light, and then went. And I was just like, okay, that was weird. But yeah, I kind of felt bad, but at the same time, I felt like a typical Doctor Who, person in the actual story who would hide halfway behind something and clearly be able to be seen by whoever the villain was at the time. I'm just like, yeah, I don't know how I did that, but maybe it was because I was watching the show.
Yeah, I mean, like, when people are, you know, going through their regular emotions and they don't have, you know, any reason to look left or look right. I mean, it's just surprising. Like, we lived a few floors up in an apartment. You really never see people looking up, like, going up. Like, there's so many people walking down at their own eye level. There's a lot going on in three dimensions, but,
well,
who would care?
No. Now I want to go into real science knowledge, is that that's a human condition because we're designed to look at planes and not look, like, look at the horizontal line, not look up or down.
Yeah,
especially you.
You know who spends a lot of time looking up? Bearded dragons, because hawks swoop down on them.
Oh, man. Well, fortunately, I don't think he has to worry too much inside here.
Not inside, man.
But at any rate, so yeah, this I definitely have vivid memories of Tegan and Turlough crawling for the ducting. And I like the fact that those scenes were filmed on film, because it gave it more of a realism, I think. I think, as far as Doctor Who sets go, this story actually did pretty decently with some of the designs and the darker scenes, and including...
And their decision to paint skulls all over the walls when they've got a bunch of dying people.
Yeah.
Also, let's just realize, this is one of the few times we've been in the other side of the TARDIS and just the front.
Oh, yeah, and, like, seen, like, the bedrooms and stuff.
Yeah, like...
And it seemed like Tegan really didn't want Turlough to have Adric's room, but she could have chosen literally any room in the TARDIS and told him it was his.
Although, I wonder how big the TARDIS was at this point.
Yeah, it's a nice throwback.
I know.
I think it was just a throwback to Adric, and I think it kind of goes to the whole fact that Tegan never really got over Adric's demise. And so I just think that's kind of important.
Yeah, and we know the TARDIS is vast, but, like, do you have to move through a labyrinth to find another suitable bedroom?
Fair point.
Who knows? I mean, there could be a lot of reasons, and I can steelman it to say, like, oh, yeah, you want to be this close to the console room.
There could also be other reasons why.
And the kitchen and other living quarters.
Or maybe
I mean,
she wanted to keep an eye on him.
Yeah, he's close to her, and Adric's room was probably close to hers, so why not keep an eye on him?
And she did a few minutes later use an excuse
too.
To go in and check on him, and she didn't even go and grab Adric's notes when she was in there.
I know. Whoops. Although, that's when all hell breaks loose anyway.
Well, all hell broke loose after that point. Like, she could have taken it. She was just so suspicious of him that she was like, it's more important for me to figure out what he's up to than to...
Mm-hmm. And so much happens to some of the characters. I mean, this is a great story to just feel awful for Nyssa, because she literally is in the only room that gets almost destroyed in the TARDIS, and then she ends up on a ship where she acquires the disease that everybody else has and gets sick herself, and nobody will listen to her. She tries so desperately in her meek self at this point to just have herself heard, and she has to go through most of the story without anybody listening to her. And then,
yeah, but regardless, she gets out there on, you know, her own, she makes it through, and she comes back, you know, in a stronger sense, where I think she probably has one of the better goodbyes and justified goodbyes that I've seen from a lot of companions.
Oh, definitely.
And I think that was a really powerful strength of hers. I think it showed fantastic integrity.
Yeah, she freed a bunch of people from slavery and is working on curing everyone from this horrible disease.
Yeah.
And is just going to, like, run this hospital. Like, it's pretty incredible.
I mean, she does step up, she's growing, and she even kisses the doctor goodbye, but those tears in Sarah Sutton's face were real, because she actually, that was one of the final scenes she did, was hugging Janet Fielding, and so the feelings and emotions were real.
And
so,
that was a really sweet scene with those two saying goodbye, because, like, you know, they really did, you know, develop a real friendship.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And although we haven't seen all of that friendship develop yet,
But it was clear just from the goodbye that they had.
Oh, yes.
Know?
No, they... And that was kind of nice. I mean, that's something that was lacking in a lot of other Doctor Who from the classic era, was the emotional impact and the actual kind of camaraderie slash connections that the people had on board the TARDIS. And that was a true connection. They truly... I mean, They had been through Adric, they had been through all these other crazy terrors, they had been through the Mara, which was a Tegan thing, and Nyssa kind of helped her out in the second one. So it's just all these things that go on with Nyssa and Tegan, so it kind of makes sense that they would have camaraderie. And getting on to camaraderie, we do have a little bit of that between Tegan and Turlough in this, because Turlough does actually look out for Tegan. He actually tries to help her.
We didn't talk through that.
And I think that's kind of admirable.
Yeah, kind of.
He's kind of, at this point in the storyline, he's kind of a mixed bag. He's got kind of this evil side to him in a sense, but he's even questioning that. Because he's like, do I really want to do that?
Well, also, I mean, like, he's clearly a coward. And every time Tegan was like, no, we need to keep going, he was like, clearly did not want to, but followed her anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's clearly self-interested, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he's made some bold moves that probably risk himself.
I would say, yeah, instead of evil, self-interested, very, very focused on, he just wants to go home, sound like.
Yeah.
There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
I just wonder, like, at this point, the mystery is, when are we going to see his home? I want to, like, see his place.
Another character that gets beat up almost every scene in this story, which gets a little ridiculous, is Valgard, who eventually becomes the leader. And I don't know why anybody would want this person as a leader, just based on that story arc. He's a pushover.
He's a pushover. Like, I think
it was more not wanting the other guy to be the leader.
Well, he was kind of awful.
But the other guy is such a hard person to deal with.
Yeah.
Then you want the person to be in charge, be the one who's easiest to knock down.
Yeah, or just like not gonna screw over literally everybody on the crew constantly.
Yeah, no, I will give you that. Iraq was pretty awful.
And I mean, also, we haven't really talked about the real villain of the story, the company.
Yeah.
The company that was sending them, you know, defective hydromel and was like controlling their slaves to control this
slavers.
Like Terminus ship to just set people aside so they can die, and they also enslave the Gorm, just everything about it seemed awful, and no one went after them.
Let's just say, what we're talking about is a hospice care facility. And sending basically a future hospice care facility to saying.
I mean, there was real cure
collecting
there.
Collecting the paychecks on possibly taking care of them or just letting them pass on.
Right, basically taking them out of view, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I always wonder how they fed them and had them go to the bathroom, or if they're just caging them up for the whole time.
Pretty sure they're just caged up and given what little gruel they have until they expire.
The thing about, you know, television media is that, like, still to this day, it's hard to smell what's going on.
Yeah. Now, I
Thank
can't...
Thank goodness.
I don't... Colin, I just want to say this. Let's never get that technology.
That's
yeah.
That's
there
okay.
There are very, very few situations where I'd want to be able to smell what's happening on TV.
I mean...
A Great British Bake Off?
That would be one of the few situations.
all the old Bourdain shows where he's going traveling...
Yeah, basically,
together.
If it's not a cooking show.
Yeah.
This one did look like it was going to be kind of grimy smelling, you know?
Yeah.
The stench.
By the way, what company decides to put... Not just, like, skulls. And I get the idea of having skulls for, like... on your doors, but like literally awesome graffiti skulls on your doors.
Plus the skeletal armor that they have, their people wearing, the fact that they name it Terminus, like they're not even hiding the fact that this is like we're taking people away so you never see them.
They at least called it the Lazarus, so
maybe the guards did that because they had to do something in their free time.
Who knows, but what I am more convinced by, and there's this probably only resonates with Baldur's Gate 3 fans, but I'm pretty sure Kethric Thorm's armor was just stolen from this episode. It's like extravagant, you know, shiny armor really built on like skeletons protecting the body.
That was such nice armor. I just loved it when I saw
it. Pretty boss.
It was pretty decent, yeah.
And I'll say nothing tops off that when you put the face mask down, it has a stash.
Yeah. Talking about stashes, favorite character, Boar, who heroically tries to save everybody by putting a wall up where the radiation's coming out, so, and almost kills himself in the process, and is probably one of the more humorous characters in this whole story. Because let's face it,
short-term memory is the first to go.
Yeah.
How strong
is that guy?
If those are the prop doors were supposed to be technically lead doors. And Boar is just lifting those things like they're tinfoil, because it pretty much worked. But
yeah, well,
they're like lead lined.
Boar must be very strong.
They would have to be lead sheets if you're going to stop act for radiation.
Yeah, well, let's just say he was one of my favorite characters in this. He's one of the more interesting characters, I'd say, because everybody else seemed either incompetent or completely off-putting. I mean, like...
I just loved when he's, like, clearly ill, and the doctor's like, I'm a doctor, can I help you? And he's like, oh, yes, you know, we can share this load, and then gives him the entire load, is just like, follow me, and the doctor's like, okay.
I love
that was great.
He always says, oh, so kind.
Yeah, when you got someone who's just like that, you know, pleasant to you, it's kind of hard to argue with them. I mean, Turlo's got a point there.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm glad that Boar didn't pass on. I'm kind of glad he made it.
No, he made it.
Barely, but he made it.
Yeah. No. I liked it when the guy finally said, okay, so we know how to make this stuff. He just walked off camera. And he's like, you kind of knew what happened because then Boar was just sitting up like, all better. Like, they didn't even go over the scene of him like getting it. There's like...
Well, I mean, also, didn't they need that tube for her to synthesize?
Oh, no.
They have more, I think.
I think, no, that was, like, the last one in the box. They made it pretty clear, like you'd see in the box.
There were multiple boxes.
They had the shipments, and then the guy in charge was like, this is colored water. The company's sending us colored water instead of the Hydromel.
No, I remember that, but I thought that the stuff that was under lock and key was not the stuff with water. I thought that was
the
last stash.
My perception was that they had some Hydromel, and they were making it smaller. It's a shrinkflation thing, but then on top of that, they were also sending fake versions of it, too.
Could be.
It seemed like he was sorting through it, you know, in a methodological way.
Well, the way I read it, though, is that was kind of like the last one, and she's just like, I can make more easily and better. Although I did like the line of, oh, this is organic. I was like, oh,
gross.
How times are gonna change.
Interesting, too, that you insert it into a hole in your armor. I wonder how it gets in you.
Well,
it's
there's
on your stomach.
That, like, presumably means that there's, like,
an
IV that goes from that hole in the armor that's, like, continuously just inside you.
My actual thought was it was just, like, an aura that, like, came around you and just, like,
inside
its
the armor.
Essence was kind of radiating around your body, taking care of things.
That makes sense.
Because
sometimes
it just looked like a vial. Like, it would have to be some other mechanism that would come up and, like, pinch through it to extract.
Well, maybe
it's
there
possible.
Is. Yeah, that wasn't really explained much. Probably for the best.
Indeed. Well, what do you guys think about this episode?
Are we saying rating time?
I was trying to foster such things.
I can rate.
Okay, rate.
I will rate.
How I
you
rate?
Know, so, this is one of... We've been kind of been spoiled for really good sets. Lately, I feel like this one also felt like a pretty nice set. It got around the idea of what we're dealing with, the spaceship and everything. The special effects for the time period were just amazing.
We watched the updated special effects version.
Definitely.
No. But honestly, it did actually help. The updated special effects helped to sell it a bit better, I'm sure. I enjoyed... The storytelling was fine. It was a good, solid plot, which you don't always get with a classic Doctor Who. So, give that a thumbs up. Minus the Clara not being there, but, you know, can't have Clara and everything.
Oh, my God. This is getting redundant.
Oh, I have to, just for you, Michael.
Important.
Anyhow, I mean, strong character, and the thing is character growth. That's the other thing. You had a lot of good character growth or character suffering and all everything in between. I had a lot I enjoyed about it. So I'm going to give this, but I'm going to make certain to more level my expectations this time. And there is room for improvement. So I'll give this a solid 8.
I'll go next.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, there was a lot of good in this. There was a lot that, you know, kind of fell flat, like, or just wasn't addressed in it. I felt that this was an all right episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I will give this one a 7.
Wow, that was a very short one. I'll go next.
Whoa.
What?
And I will say that of the 3 stories that we are into, and I obviously have seen all 3 of them already, I think this one's the weaker of the bunch.
Yeah.
And I will also say that there is a lot of incompetence in a lot of the characters that are in this story. I mean, you've got Oliver's kind of cowering and running away from the battle or the war or whatever they was supposed to be in. And then you've got all the guards that don't seem to be able to really do anything really all that well. And I don't know, the Black Guardian, again, we've talked about it, doesn't really seem that threatening in this. I mean, yeah, he's got a great voice, don't get me wrong. Valentine Dial really plays up the role really well, but I would say that it doesn't make sense that he's sending Turlough to do his bidding if he's this all-powerful, godlike creature in the first place, A. And B, unless he can't, of course, and maybe he just can't be involved, otherwise something else happens to him. I don't know. But the important thing is that it just, the plans that he gives to Turlough don't seem to be doable, because Turlough's in a completely different part of the ship than the Doctor, and Turlough gets stuck down in the ducting, and all these other things. And it's like, if you're the Black Guardian, you should know what's going on already. You should understand what's happening. So just continuously berating Turlo isn't really going to get Turlo to actually be on your side in all this. I don't know. It just seemed kind of weird. Anyway, I'm going to give this story... I'm going to have to give this a 6 out of 10. It's not abysmal, but it's not the greatest. It has some great characters, like I mentioned, and just has some fun. But it's just not strong enough to give it much higher.
All right. Well, I'll round us out this time. I'm feeling very honored with this slot. So hopefully I'll do it justice. Maybe not in all of your eyes, because I think you're inflating this episode, every single one of you. I think that there was a lot of good that we discussed, but we really just focused and honed in on that good. Like, this was a strong opening episode, I thought, but really fell flat throughout. I kind of thought it was intriguing, you know, if not misguided and paradoxical, to have it being the cause of the Big Bang in the center of it. I liked Wolfman, don't get me wrong, but it seems like he was just thrown in there as a monster of the week in a very random happenstance. Turlo and Tegan, they had a nice interaction at the beginning, but then they were just, like, crawling through vents the whole time and didn't really have much else going on for them. I just did not care about this story. It was very hard for me to care about the plot that they were crafting, and I thought that I would, because the opening I thought was intriguing enough to get me going, but the spark never really came. Cool armor, don't get me wrong, that was pretty cool. Set design, I gotta give them props for that. And you know what? I'll give them props for the acting, too. I think the doctor, you know, Tegan, I think they were strong in their acting chops. But I can't say that the plot really came together on this one. And I can't say that it has much of any replayability. And I could be proven wrong on the next watch. I won't take that away from them. But in the terms of, like, setting this where it's at, I think it's really fair to give this a 5 out of 10.
Wow.
And that's
right.
My final decision.
Wow, we dropped a point each rating.
8, 7, 6, 5. Well, I think it's...
Should I go again, get us to 4?
No, I think
honestly,
we're good.
Honestly, you brought up a lot of good points. I mean, I still think you're really... Well, you getting to go last brought the negativity out. This...
Maybe
I
so.
Know, what did you do?
Boar gives it a whole point for me, so...
Turlo gives it a point for me.
There you go. I mean, there. This is a controversial story because this is one of those that either people don't really care about it or they.
There's a lot of good
like
it.
Yeah, and
I watched
this in a good mood, and I know last time I watched it, I didn't like it as much, so it also could just be that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a pretty good mood this time, and I was kind of getting pumped for the first one. I had some colorations that this was probably not the best of the three stories. Like, that might have given me some bias here, but. Honestly, I think, you know, just, you know, from plot and plot alone and from how I'm vibing with the characters, it was just hard for me to care and really get into the story past the first episode.
That's fair.
Like, if anything, I think the strength of the first episode really set it up for failure because it felt weaker and weaker, you know, as time went on.
I gotcha.
Just like our ratings.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. If it wasn't for the fact I'm always a sucker for a hunchback, like, story where what looks like a bad guy or an evil person then turns out to be like, oh, he's cool. I like those kind of stories, and I especially like how Doctor Who does those from time to time, where it's like,
don't lean in.
I will give it to you, though. They didn't really explain it too much. They didn't go into it. It's like
why is he there?
Why, or just destroy the box, please, and...
Well, they did sort of explain it. He's there under the control of the company to go and try and go into the radiated areas that the humans or humanoids can't go into.
Right, but how did they discover this if they're just blasting people with radiation? Why does he need to be involved? What's with that box that controls him?
Where did he
They probably needed the box.
No,
they
but
needed
I'm just saying,
to
it doesn't
him.
Really make sense to have a box that emits a sound that, like, forces someone to obey. So that was kind of brushed over.
Like, I get the fact that, again, we're dealing with pre-modern storytelling, like, concepts in television So we get that. So and that's where I give it like waves, and that's why I give it an 8. But I can see how, especially when you look at it, it does fall flat.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next time when we do the Enlightenment, we're actually going to watch the special edition, movie edition, so
Ooh.
That we can get through it a little bit faster, but also because that's what the director had intended. This is also the brand new Blu-ray special edition, so it's updated special effects to this past year.
And honestly, if I were going to pick a classic Doctor Who story to have updated special effects, I think it would be Enlightenment.
Yeah, and come on, in our age of 2024, let's go for, you know, the supercharged, streamlined special effects edition of today.
Well, also, I think it's worth it. I haven't even seen it yet, so I'm looking forward to that. But we will be skipping at least 1 week, but we'll be back. Any rate.
And, yep, look forward to seeing you guys in the new season, too.
Yeah, Shooting Out was coming up soon. All right, well, have a good night, y'all.
Bye.
See you when I'm over again.